Investing Simplified is Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I'm sitting in for Chuck Price today, who's enjoying some other weather venue. And in the studio with me is Kevin Stege with the Baker Colson Law CPA firm. I've got too many law firms on my mind here this morning.
Hey, law firms are a good thing. Good morning, Carl.
Well, there's a difference of opinion on some of that.
Yes.
But this is Investing Simplified, and this is a show where we talk about estate planning and probate matters and other legal matters, as well as tax matters and accounting matters, and investing in finance and how to keep your money safe and how to protect your money and how to make more money. The money part of it is again in another state today. But we'd love to have you interact with us. And we have now, in addition to the number they gave you at the beginning, the 503-417-7626 number, in addition to that, we have an 800 number, which is 800-990-0750. So if you want to call us and you happen to be outside the area and you don't want to make that long-distance call, well, we now have the 800 number as well. We really welcome your calls and questions and comments. We have kind of an interesting show today. We're going to have sort of a potpourri, I guess you might say, of topics. And one of the things we do want to tell you is that this is a local show with local people. All of us who appear on the show are here in the local area, have been in the business community, and we live in the community, and so we're not somebody that that really don't understand what kind of environment that you live in here in beautiful Portland. By the way, we can sit here seeing the sun come over the city and the high-rise buildings, and it's really really a very attractive morning. So have a cup of coffee, sit down and enjoy, and give us a call because we would love to hear from you and just chat with you about your concerns, if there are any, about estate planning or questions that you have or about taxes. It's getting to be tax time, and I know that a lot of the tax issues are going to be talked about today. Kevin's prepared to talk about a lot of things because he's in the midst of tax season, and it's fresh on his mind, and it's probably fresh on yours. You know, some people will be getting those 1099s and W-2s and all those things, and they're going to start thinking about, you know, what they have to do. I know I have, and so you may want to call and get that free advice. So 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750. Well, it's traditional for Chuck to tell you about the stock market, so I'm just going to briefly tell you what I know, which is very little, and that is that yesterday the S&P was down 338 points to 1,790, and then that was the S&P. The Dow was actually down 318 points, and it was below 16,000, which is 15,879. Each one of them, the S&P and the Dow, actually went down roughly 2%, 2.09 for the S&P and 1.96 for the Dow. That's information that just came off of Yahoo Finance, and so it was a down week. And I don't know what that means exactly, but one of the things that Chuck always talks about is to make sure that you have some kind of a strategy that protects you from the big downs. So I leave that up to the experts on that.
You said that kind of matter-of-factly. It was kind of a down week. That was 2% just yesterday alone. So that's That was quite a jump, but I think we kind of all expected that type of volatility anymore. It just seems to be the way things are.
Well, that's what I mean. I don't mean to be matter of fact, because that could mean an awful lot of money to some people. But I think the point is that it is a very volatile market. It seems to be very sensitive, and there are many, many different opinions about the whys, just like the rest of the world, I guess. The world seems to be a very volatile place, so I guess maybe the stock market follows that. But anyway, one of the things I'd like to just talk a little bit about, besides talking about some tax issues and things like that, one of the things we're going to do later on in the show is we have been here in the area for a long, long time, but a lot of you folks don't really know a whole lot about us. So Kevin and I are going to talk a little bit about our respective firms and our respective work that we do and the kinds of clients that we like or the kinds of clients that we have. And I like all of my clients. And you know, how we do our business and all that sort of thing, just as a sort of an introduction to the new year. And if you have questions about us, that's okay too. Give us a call and, you know, ask us, if you want to sort of, the big term is vetting. If you want to vet us in some fashion for your needs, that would be fine too. We'll be glad to answer your questions and hopefully get to know you a little bit better, our listeners. And if you have some topic that you're really interested in that you'd like us to do, you know, a special segment on, we'd be glad to do that too. So give us a holler at 503-417-7626.
Carl, I really see this this program as being a good ace up your sleeve type option when you just have a question or a thought or you're not sure. You know, maybe you can take care of your own tax preparation. It's pretty straightforward, that type of a thing. But you have you have some sort of question on maybe a new transaction, or you're planning something in the future, or you're coming into a different time of life, marriage, maybe marriage or divorce, or inheritance, life planning type issues. Just giving us a call to we've got three different perspectives typically in the studio here when Chuck is here, and to be able to just bounce something off of us. If we don't know the answer just off the top of our head, we can say, hey, this here are some issues that you need to consider or look at, or we need more information to be able to, give us a call at our office or something, and we can give you more specified information or planning. You know, and I think all three of us, I don't want to speak for you guys, but I'll certainly, do that free of charge to initially get, finding out what's going on, what's your situation and what issues you need to consider, and then go from there. So really, it's a good thing to an option to have to when some planning issues come along.
Well, I'd certainly encourage people to do that, because a lot of times just talking about it will give you at least a sense of direction, if nothing else. And I know that that the different perspectives are important, because there are a lot of times, one of the things that we have learned over the years, and I've heard many people talk in continuing legal education and also back in law school, was that in almost every business or real estate or personal transaction that you endeavor to do, there is some kind of a tax implication. And likewise, in almost all sorts of tax plannings, there are some underlying legal principles that may influence which way it goes. So, and those disciplines don't always cross over in a way that is obvious to either one. That's why I think a lot of times we try very hard to consider those things, and then there's a lot of times, like I'll call Kevin a lot of times during the week and ask him a tax question, because I'm, you know, don't really want to spend the time to to research it myself, and he knows the answer, and occasionally the folks at Baker & Coulson call and ask about a little legal issue or some kind, and we try to help them out as well.
I believe I have your direct line.
yeah. In fact, that reminds me, we had a question last week that we sort of hedged around it because we didn't know, and the question we had last week from a caller was whether or not airline miles that you earn on your credit card are considered taxable income to you. Honestly, I didn't really know the answer, so I leave that up to you.
Sure thing. Yes, you guys sent me an email after that show. I was absentee last week? And that's a very good question, because it's actually been a highly contended issue with the IRS in times past, but they have finally pretty well shaken it out to figure out who owes tax and who doesn't on these type of things. And the answer is yes and no. So when you, the easy answer is airline mileage, no. The IRS for a long time said yes, there was a significant benefit. Yes, this should be taxable. But the problem came down to, how do you quantify the amount? You know, somebody redeems their airline miles for a transatlantic flight, you know, from Portland to the other side of the world. That's a pretty significant cost that they got a benefit for. Somebody else redeems it on a puddle jumper from, you know, one state to the next. Not so much. So, you know, number of my, you know, so it was difficult for them to quantify and to be able to issue a 1099 and say what really was the value. What if it was you redeemed it the day before? Well, the fair market value of a day before airline ticket is pretty expensive, but if you had planned it out 6 months before, it's pretty cheap.
You know, that's pretty interesting, because like you said, when you make your reservation makes a big difference. And, you know, what days you use and also what time of the year and where you're going. So I can see that's a valuation nightmare. And I can see the litigation coming on that one that would say, wait a minute, you can't show what the value is here.
Exactly. So I believe they finally shook it out in tax court, I think, is where it finally got decided. And so airline mileage, typically no. If you take that airline mileage and redeem it for cash, now it's starting to get interesting. I will step back real quick. When you open a credit card account or a bank account and they give you, you know, like sometimes you see a bank that says, come join us, we'll give you $50 in cash to start your account, or $100, that's going to be taxable. That is going to come to you on a 1099 just like interest income. So if you get a direct cash benefit for opening an account, that'll be taxable. You'll report it on your Schedule B like any other interest.
How about the cash back type cards?
Well, and that's interesting. And that's where the differentiation comes, is that is going to be no also, because they are going to be viewing that as just a reduction in your purchase price. So, you know, if you had bought something for $100 and you accrued a reward and they gave you, you know, a buck back on that, 1% back, you really only paid $99 for that item. And so it's like a sale that you took advantage of. So in those cases, most of the time it's going to be no. Anyway, that's kind of the high, for the most part, it's going to be no. So.
It's interesting how the tax law can take what sounds like a real simple issue and make it far more complicated than most of us would imagine.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
Anyway, well, still along the lines of tax stuff, like I said, we're going to talk about a potpourri and of various topics. And again, if you have a tax question or a legal question about estate planning or probate work or anything else, please give us a call. But anyway, I was looking at an article the other day, and I've known this for some time, that the number of states in the United States that actually have a state estate tax are relatively few. And according to this article in the New York Times that I saw on Yahoo Finance, there are about 16 states which still have estate taxes. The most harmful, or the most expensive, I guess you might say, to the taxpayer happen to be in New York and New Jersey. No surprise there, I guess. However, New York is in the process of, you know, evaluating whether they want to do away with it. But of those 16 states, also Indiana and Ohio have just repealed theirs, and then others are expected to follow, because there are some people who basically move away from their state, or move to a state, or from a state because of the estate tax. Now, Oregon has an estate tax on anything over $1 million. Washington has an estate tax on anything over $2 million. In New Jersey, they have an estate tax on anything over $675,000. Likewise, New York has a $1 million exemption, and so that's a big deal, especially if you're. And it used to be, you know, there are a lot of people that have more than $675,000, and actually there are quite a few people that have more than a million. There are relatively few people who meet the federal standard, though. The federal standard is now $5.34 million per person. So a married couple could send tax-free for federal purposes up to $10.68 million. So what you're the people you're really capturing are the middle class and upper middle class people that are the people that you probably want in your state because they're the good consumers. So that's one of the reasons the states are kind of considering those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And, you know, Oregon at its $1 million level and Washington at its $2 million, well, when you combine that with a husband and wife, you're talking really Oregon, if you do proper planning, if you have $2 million or under, you should be able, for a couple, yeah. You should be able to properly plan and not have to pay inheritance tax. Mm-hmm. Washington should be $4 million. So when you double that, you know, $2 million can be exceeded fairly easy if real estate bounces back, that type of a thing for a couple. $4 million's getting up there. Mm-hmm. So there is a fairly big difference between Oregon and Washington, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
And I've seen people cross the river specifically for that to retire over there and make their life over there in retirement.
And then there are people who like live in Washington but work here and maybe own businesses here, and then it becomes more complex because then you got to figure out who, you know, where is the asset and who gets to tax it and what happens, and so those things get really challenging.
That's right. And in general, with that, say you live in Washington but you have an Oregon piece of real estate, and if that real estate comprises 25% of your state, Oregon, and you're over $1 million, Oregon's going to have you file a return, figure the tax on your full estate, and then multiply it by 25%, and that's your Oregon share in general.
Yeah, it's a interesting calculation, though. I'm glad you did that. So anyway, that's just a little bit of tax information for us this morning, and I think what we're going to do now is maybe take just a little break, and then if you come back and you have your second cup of coffee and you want to talk to us a little bit, please do so. We are easily reached at 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750. If you have a tax question, if you have a legal question, or if you just want to comment on the show or find a topic that you want us to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. This is Investing Simplified. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepsen.
Guns and money. Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. Chuck Price with Price Financial Group Wealth Management is out of the studio today, but Kevin Stege with the Baker Colson CPA firm is here with me, and we're talking about legal things and tax things, and we're here to answer your questions. This is the time that I try to make some kind of a comment, and usually it has to do with something that's come up in my practice, but this time it just happened to be I was scanning in an article on some of the bills that have been passed in the most recent Oregon legislature, and these don't necessarily relate to estate planning, but they just sort of caught my eye, and I was just kind of interested in them a little bit. One is, you might think it's good or bad, I'm not sure, depending on your point of view, but Senate Bill 491 has come out and allows minors 14 years or older, so someone between 14 and 18, to obtain mental health or chemical dependency counseling and treatment without parental consent. And I'm not sure what that's about. So anyway, say we have a caller on, by the way, John, and he has a tax question. Hi, John. How are you?
Good morning. I had a question about, wanted to need to talk a little bit about taking Social Security at 62 and continue working and the tax implications in that.
Okay, very good question. Basically, 62 is going to be the earliest you can start taking Social Security, and if you continue working, if you make over a certain amount of money, every dollar you make over that amount is going to reduce the amount of Social Security benefit that you get. Once you hit age 65, you can, or your full retirement age, I should say, it's either 65 or your full retirement age, then you can make an unlimited amount of working at a job, and you'll get your full amount of Social Security. Now the level is fairly low. It's around $14,000 off the top of my head. So once you're taking Social Security at 62 and you're making over $14,000 of income that you're reporting, Social Security Administration is going to look back at your tax return last year or ask you what you think it is going to be, and they'll reduce your benefit for you know 3 years or so.
And doesn't that also mean too that the amount that you get is substantially lower at 62 than it would be if you wait generally than if you wait till
that's
the
standard
full retirement age.
Exactly, that's the standard rule. Is you know, you're taking your lower benefit at 62, and the longer you hold off on your Social Security, you get more closer to your full retirement age.
Yes, if you continue working and make over that, even though they reduce your Social Security by that much, how is that handled tax-wise? Is it all tax and regular income, I suppose?
I didn't catch all of that, but I believe you said how it is taxed. Your Social Security gets taxed the same no matter, you know, no matter how much you receive or not. It's just going to be, you're going to have more earnings and less Social Security. Social Security typically is only up to 85% of it can get taxed. So it really depends on the amount of your other income to determine how much of your Social Security is taxed on your federal return. And of course, Oregon doesn't tax Social Security.
I see. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for the call, John. Appreciate it very much. Okay, well, that was a great question.
It is, and those are some of the really key planning issues. Is, you know, figuring out when you want to start your Social Security, and especially, and you know, factoring in how long you can are planning on working. That's a very critical one to plan on. And you know, if you've got your numbers figured out, I think it becomes pretty clear when you need to take it and when not. And of course, you have to. The X factor, how long are you going to live? But that's a key planning time of life.
Absolutely. Well, that's one of the things. It's good to plan, but you also have to realize that sometimes things happen. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about this a lot here before, that there have been, if you don't think life's uncertain, you haven't lived long enough, because we've seen so much this past year, both Chuck and I, and I'm sure you have in your practice too, Kevin, that, you know, many people that I knew personally, or clients, or whatever, were, or family members that were fine one day, and the next day they had something terrible wrong with them, and, you know, and their whole life is different or gone. And but nonetheless, it's important to get your affairs in order and make sure that your planning is there, because, you know, all things being equal, we hope that we all enjoy a long, prosperous life. So
one last item to pass on to John is, I believe, for every dollar you make over roughly $14,000, they're going to reduce your benefit by 50 cents. I believe that's the calculation, up to a certain amount. So,
that's right. We're back on Carl's comments. And like I said, I mentioned the one Senate bill. There's another one that I think is particularly interesting, and I would like to think that most people would kind of understand this as an important step. House Bill 2654 basically now prohibits an employer from requiring applicants and employees to have access to their social media sites and accounts. In other words, they can't make them get into whatever you call it, a friend, or you know, you can, they can see the public part, but they can't see, you know, they can't make you, and then and they are not, they're also prohibited from retaliating because you won't. So
providing so, that info to the employer.
Yeah.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And because I know that there have been, you know, some employers who will say, I want to see your Facebook page before we, you know, as part of your application. I think that's a, I don't think that, now that's an unlawful employment practice. So can't do that anymore if you're doing that. So that's kind of, those things I thought were interesting. There were a bunch of other things that were important, but probably don't affect people's lives all that much. They're more lawyer stuff and accounting stuff. So anyway, well, Kevin, why don't we talk a little bit about you and well, you have some, yeah, we're going to come back and do your tax planning, but let's just start our little process about introductions.
Okay.
And so why don't you tell us a little bit about Baker Coulson?
All right. Well, we kind of thought we would, you know, we've been on this station for well over a year now, and we've been doing this. I've been at least with you guys for 3 years, and you guys did it, or maybe
several years before
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So this is ongoing. I thought it'd be a good time to just kind of, you know, give a little. We are local, all three of us, and we're actually, you know, kind of friends too, and stuff. And we like our clients to be friends and stuff. And so I thought it'd be good to do a little bit of, you know, just kind of a personal look. We don't want to get, you know, name, address, social security number, but kind of give you a flavor of who we are. So a little bit about me. I know you guys are always giving me grief about, you know, not knowing what happened before the 70s. And to some extent, that's justified because I really, you know, other than reading about it, I wasn't there. So I am pushing 40, though, but I've been in the tax and accounting business for almost 18 years now. Have had my CPA for a good portion of that, but I grew up in Eugene for 13 years and just outside of Corvallis for I spent another 13 years in the little town of Independence, and my dad was at Hewlett Packard there for a long time in Corvallis, kind of a institution of Corvallis along with Oregon State, and so I've got the green and yellow running through me on one side and the black and orange running through me on the other side. So I have to say I'm a duck first, but I am I'm a kind duck. I do like the beavers also. So anyway, that's where my loyalties fall. Well, I am a fan of finding out, finding, you know, alternative ways of doing something, and sometimes it works out for the better, sometimes not. And I think my folks were too, because for a lot of my upbringing, my primary years, I was home educated. Mom and dad, especially mom, spent a lot of time with my brother and I, and we went through a pretty rigorous home education program back when it wasn't so popular, back in the late 80s, early 90s. And after that, though, I took an apprenticeship in Chicago for a couple years, just outside of Chicago, a town called Oak Brook. We were right next to McDonald's World Headquarters in a area there, if any of you happen to know the Chicago area. But when I came back, I needed to get going on my vocation and what I was going to be doing, and needed to make some money for college. So I took a tax prep course to get a job to make some money and pass the Oregon licensed tax preparer exam. That first year, and worked one season with H&R Block, and that got me enough experience to get into on with a CPA firm, of which I think you know the firm down there. And
That's right. You worked with my mother's CPA.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And a small world that it is. Mm-hmm. And I started just coming home at nights and studying, and started studying directly for the CPA exam. And after 4 years with that firm, I passed the CPA exam without having gone to college, without having taken a single college course. After that, though, I've added some upper-level courses. There's just some things you need some rigorous book study on to learn and such. After that, I worked for Winston Spivey in Albany, and he's got a classic name, and he was a classic accountant. And I have to say, he turned me from knowing about accounting into being efficient at accounting. And he liked things done a certain way, and it was good to learn them and do them that way. So it was a great experience working for him. Moved up here to Portland. I've been with Baker and Coulson for 8-year anniversaries coming up here next week, and I'm a partner with them, a shareholder, and we've got a very good niche for the Portland area. We're not a downtown firm and downtown prices, but we're not your mom and pop shop. We're the largest local firm east of the Willamette River in the Portland metro area. We have 8 CPAs. We've got a wide range of experience. They've been there for coming up on 40 years here pretty soon. Baker still roams the halls, causing trouble. We've got Coulson's still there doing. He's the managing partner, and we've got experience in construction, accounting and issues, tax issues and accounting related to construction, real estate, medical and dental practices. We've got one lady who does a lot of expert testimony and forensic accounting. We do financial statement compilation and preparations when you get a loan from your bank with your business and you have to show the bank how things are going. Part of the agreements are to have an outside financial statement. We do those. And of course, we do associated, payroll and accounting, that type of thing for the small business. Our ideal client would be a local, what would be considered a small business. A lot of times, it doesn't mean small dollar amounts, but a closely held corporation or partnership, and the related owner's individual tax returns, and the accounting associated with that, and doing the whole tax planning for that unit. And that a lot of times includes succession planning, estate planning, that type of a thing. And during that whole process, we get mixed in with accounting or attorney firms to you need an attorney to help set up the business and the agreements. You need them to look over your real estate contracts and your business sales, do the estate planning. I mean, we work we're really integrated with a lot of the local attorney firms, and of course Warren Allen too. So
indeed. In fact, we've been, I think we work well together. It's been a very, I think because we share similar structure and a similar kind of philosophy as far as service to our clients. And Warren Allen is like that too. We happen to be the largest sort of general practice firm east of the river too.
That's right.
We have 9 lawyers, and we've been there since the early 1970s. And we do just about everything in the world. As you mentioned there, we do, of course, estate planning and probate, which is kind of the area that I do mostly, but we do a lot of family law, divorce and custody and things like that. A real big business in landlord work. We represent, one of my partners has a large number of institutional landlord clients, and we do real property work, business work, personal injury and medical malpractice, and even some bankruptcy. And also, one of the things that's a little bit unique about us, everybody in our office is also a litigator. Now, my litigation, I used to do a lot of litigation in business and real estate, but I don't anymore. But I still do litigation regarding estate planning and probate and things like that. So virtually everybody in the office, if they don't do it actively, they have done it. And the reason I think that's important to have that is because litigation happens when something goes wrong. And so when you see what's gone wrong, I think it makes it easier as a transactional lawyer to know how to do it right in the first place. So now usually I must say, though, that a lot of times things go wrong not because the documents or the legal framework or the decisions were wrong, but because the people don't get along, and that's something we can't fix. But unfortunately, that seems to be the way of the world as well. And ultimately, I guess what lawyers do is to keep people from shooting each other. So, I mean, as a practical matter, that's the whole notion of it, I think. That's keeping things civil. But anyway, so you have a lot of individual clients, though, as well. I mean, non-business clients.
Absolutely. And that's, we're looking for new clients with the, as the economy is changing and reinventing itself over these last 5 years and stuff, we've seen I think the whole accounting profession has seen a shift in, clients. People are looking to save money. We've actually acquired a number of, clients that have left downtown firms that, are coming out our way. But, we do small, easy individual returns, too. A lot of times it's not bad to just have us do it for a year, take a look, give you ideas. We've got, a lot of experience among our CPAs and our staff. We have about a total of, 18, 20 staff during tax season. So we are here to answer your questions, help you with your taxes. I think first and foremost, you hear it a lot, but we enjoy our clients. We try to establish a relationship with our clients, get to know you. This isn't just a paper pushing type of operation that we just get things in and out. But we look to understand your situation and really give you ideas. So that's a I think, and we're here year round too, so that always helps. A lot of small tax firms are not. So,
I see that we have another caller. Bruce, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Bruce. Carl Jepson here.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What's your question today?
Well, I have a unique situation. I'm a retired person, a transplant from another state, and I have a minor child, adopted foster kid that I adopted a while ago. And I don't have anybody out here. My family's all back east, and I'm wondering how I go about protecting all the assets I have for her benefit in the long run. I've been to a trust attorney, but they couldn't answer hardly any of the questions I had about how the 401, the 457s work. I have a pension that she's listed as 100% survivor on, which she will collect in full for her entire life once I pass on. And right now I don't have any protection for these assets, and I need to, try and figure out how I go about securing something so that over the long haul it's in her best interest and that the money goes for her, not for the ex-wife who will probably get guardianship if something happened to me.
Okay, well, that's a good. I was going to ask you about that. So the ex-wife, you were both her parents. You were both her adoptive parents, and so now you're the single parent. And how old is the child?
She's 13 right now, but she'll be 14 soon.
Okay, so you've got some real vulnerable years between now and when she becomes an adult. So, and hopefully that you won't need to do anything, but. There are a couple of things you could do. Certainly, one of the problems with especially assets like 401ks and annuities and retirement benefits going directly to a minor, the problem with that is that usually what happens is the guardian, there has to be a guardian or a conservator appointed if she doesn't have one. But like you said, you have a parent, and an adoptive parent is the same thing as a natural parent as far as the law is concerned. So you're right. Unless there were some very unusual circumstance, your ex-wife would become the guardian of the child if you were to pass away in that 14.
Right, I assume that's going to be the case, even though I have primary custody of her, and I get child support and that sort of stuff. But she's remarried. I'm concerned about the motives of if they had access to this kind of money, because I'm looking at around $900,000 in cash assets, mm-hmm. and then plus real estate and property that I own and mm-hmm. those sorts of things.
Well, so. One of the things, if I were looking at your circumstances, and I without giving you a specific legal advice, but one thing you would certainly consider is to establish a living trust now. and then you would structure it in such a way that that you would then name your IRA or your annuity. You would name the trust as the beneficiary, and you would provide in the trust certain language that allows the annuity or the 401k or that kind of an asset to be stretched out over a longer period than if you just made her a beneficiary, which would not be the best, I don't think, in this instance, especially given what you're telling me. You don't want somebody else being able to control the money. And then you would appoint someone who was an independent trustee, someone who would be aware of your concerns and would protect that money. And we would structure it in such a way that we would say, you know, one of our goals here is to keep the money out of the hands of mom and keep it for the benefit of the child. And here's kind of how we're going to do it. And that's not an uncommon common kind of provision. It would almost be an automatic thing. Your trustee would step in, wouldn't be the guardian of the child, but would have control of the money. And would be able to, for example, distribute that money, you know, to or for the benefit of the child. For example, instead of, you know, I mean, now obviously there's some things that you can't stop. Say, for example, there was an educational need to get a really nice computer, and trustee says, sure, buy that for you, and gives it to the kid, and mom takes the computer down to the pawn shop. Well, that's pretty hard to avoid. But your daughter's 14, and she probably would know that she was, you know, getting ripped off, and she could then go complain to the trustee, who could, you know, try to take some action in that regard. So, I mean, it's not a perfect world, but it certainly keeps the hands of the ne'er-do-well off the money, and it can be used for just about any purpose that would, you know, that you would have for her. And then you could set it up in such a way that it would provide for her education if that's an issue, and all those kinds of things, as it usually is. But you could have that last for some period of time, even to the point of, say, you know, 25, 30, even later. But, you know, at some point it gets a little bit too far away, but I think. But the money would then be distributed to or for her benefit. You could provide situations where if she... You know, sometimes people put benchmarks, like, you know, if she graduates from college, you give her some percentage of it, or maybe she gets a job and she wants to buy a house and she needs money for a down payment. You could provide for that, and augment her own, you know, do things that would sort of encourage her to good citizenship and achievement. But while at the same time, you know, providing for emergencies and all sorts of things. So you would sort of have a surrogate parent in the trustee, in the sense of providing for her best interests. But it would have to be somebody you trusted. And quite frankly, there's always the risk that you have, you know, somebody that isn't going to think like you do. There are professional fiduciaries the professional trustees that you could hire that one of the good things about them is that they usually have to be bonded, and so they're insured in the event that they steal the money, but they usually don't. So that might be another option you could look at.
I've checked into the trustee thing is a big issue for me, because, you know, I've over my life I've had friends, family instances where I've seen where people have passed on and money became available, and that's when you really find out the integrity of the people you're dealing with in your family and so forth. And in all cases that I'm aware of, it gets pretty nasty, and the more money, the nastier it seems to get. You know, so
well,
even though you think you trust somebody now, they friend, family, whatever.
Well, you know, sitting in my chair, it's really easy to get jaded at what bad things people will do to their family, the very people that they're, you know, basically sworn to protect. But that's where I said professional fiduciaries come in, and it doesn't necessarily have to be some big giant fiduciary that, you know, doesn't have to be, you know, the, you know, big bank or something, because for one thing, big banks don't typically handle anything under millions of dollars. But there are individual professional or companies that do professional fiduciary work. Yes, there's a fee, But then you get somebody who's insured, and you also get somebody who knows what they're doing, and you get somebody who, you know, who has no dog in the fight. So they're not influenced by the family squabbling or anything. They're looking after the best interests of the child, and they want to have their business continue. And besides which, if they were to, you know, squander the money, then they have a bond that you know covers it, so that the individual beneficiary would, you know, be protected later. So that's a doable thing, and the cost of that, you know, you can find different levels, but a lot of them use like kind of a sliding scale for the nature of the work that they perform. So, for example, if they're doing like just kind of running around administrative work, they charge one rate. But if they're doing something that has to do with, you know, like really making investment decisions or accounting kind of things or whatever, they'll charge a little bit more. And yes, there it will come out of there. But by the same token, I think in the long run, as opposed to having a maybe not so trusty trustee, boy, it's a cheap price to pay. So I would look into that. And there are a number of them around the area that have good reputations and do good
and
work.
How do you get in touch with those?
Well, that's a little hard. I'll tell you what, if you want to do, if you want to call my office next week, I can dig up a handful of names of people that I know. Okay. And you can start there, and you can interview them and talk to them and see what they do. I know a number of you know, they range from companies that do, you know, there are some companies that do like professional conservators and guardians, and they do a lot of cases for the courts. And then you have some individuals who do it, and they have a lot fewer cases because if you're an individual, you can only handle so many of those. And a lot of times these folks have a component of a social work kind of case management component, which, you know, they really, really, you know, assess the needs of the person and are actively involved with them. And so it's not like just some, you know, big money company doing nothing. They really do try to integrate what's that shouldn't be entirely fair, but because big trust companies do good work too, but it's on a different scale. They're not personally involved quite the same as the small guys.
So do these people come on board after you've set up the trust, or yeah, are they involved in the planning of the trust also?
Not usually. They're not usually involved in the planning of the trust, but they come on board usually in the event that you die or become incapacitated or whatever. Then
you have to have them set up in the
You should, yeah. You need to have them appointed in the trust documents so that they have the legal authority when the time comes to do what they need to do. And then, of course, they're going to have to work with mom because, you know, and that's another good thing, because if you pick another family member, that might be somebody that mom really doesn't want to work with. And so it may be that's a really good thing.
Yeah, I'm just concerned that the best interests of my daughter are looked out after and not the interests of whatever else might be going on
right
in the family at the time. So,
well, I think that's the best way to handle that. I mean, I really do. And I often draft sort of, after talking with people and getting a sense of the dynamics and the concerns, we often draft what I would call a statement of intent that basically talks about, these are the kinds of things I'm trying to avoid, these are the kinds of things I'm trying to, you know, take care of, these are the kinds of things I'm trying to, you know, provide for, not necessarily exclusively, but, you know, in other words, give a sense of what your thinking is in the document itself as a statement of intent and purpose.
Okay. Well, that helps me out a little bit. I guess I need to find a trust attorney that knows what they're doing.
Well, I hope you give us a consideration when that happens. Like I said, we give our numbers and stuff at the end of the day, and that's the kind of work that I do. But there are a lot of them around, and if for one reason you're not, you come and chat with me, then you want second opinions, or you want to go talk to somebody else, I can certainly let you know a number of other people in the area that do that kind of work. So.
Okay, great.
You bet.
Thanks.
You bet. Thanks, Bruce. Good call.
You know, that's a great call. You know, the ointment here for his financial situation is the trust. The trust is a perfect fit for what he's looking to do. The fly in the ointment is finding the right trustee. And that, you know, in his particular situation, you know, his real estate can even go into the trust, sure, and be managed after he passes for the benefit of his daughter. But finding the right trustee I don't know if the big companies are going to get involved in, you know, real estate management in that situation.
I think it would depend on the magnitude of it. As a
general, could be costly.
Yeah, as a general rule, they don't like doing that. They don't like managing property. They manage money.
Yeah.
Like stocks and bonds and money. Mm-hmm. But typically, if there was significant real estate involved, the trustee probably wouldn't manage it. An individual trustee would probably
pay somebody,
management company to do it because that can be a full-time job depending on what the real estate is. I mean, if it's, you know, if you've got a dozen rentals, that's almost a full-time job or something, or if you've got a shopping center or, you know, commercial buildings and things, that's an awful lot to take on.
Very good. Well, should we take a quick break here?
We should.
Get our last one in and maybe just a few final thoughts before we close on the show.
Yeah, we can come back with the tax investigator, I think.
Okay.
Okay. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
That's right.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Coulson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and we have just a few minutes here before we wrap up, and I know this is the time when most people like to call, but we probably won't have time to take your call here for the rest of today, but consider us for next week. That was just a great question Bruce had. He's spot on what he's looking to do. He's got some vetting to do. He's got some, research. I think you're a great place to start and, possibly end. And the key here in the whole thing is finding a successor trustee with integrity. And I'm involved in two situations right now with professional trustees that I don't want to say they don't have integrity, but they are causing a lot of trouble and churning the file. Them and their attorney are making a lot of money. And I think if the decedent had known how this whole thing had played out and how much money was spent on just things that just make your head spin, that's like, you've got to be kidding me. It gets your blood boiling.
You know, it's one of the hard things because a lot of times what happens is that, it is really hard to get that person who does it economically. Mm-hmm. But there are some out there, and like you say, there are some that don't.
That's why I really like our relationship with Warren Allen and particularly with you, Carl, is knowing your background and being involved with you for so long. I mean, it's to me, it's a great referral for my clients to you and your firm. You guys are here to stay, and so are we. And we try to do the right thing by our clients. And we're actually we do some fiduciary trustee work ourselves. One of our partners is on a couple trusts. But, you know, we have this one situation, which we're not trustee of. I'm aware of one situation where very similar to what he's talking about, a young lady acquired a significant amount of wealth through a trust, and it included real estate, like a working ranch. It included closely held stock with, you know, valued in the millions, so on and so forth. So this is a pretty significant trust. And her aunt was appointed the trustee. Fortunately, her aunt is, you know, doing the right thing, and it's working out really well. It's there are success stories, and
absolutely. I mean, and I think that's the critical issue. And I think a lot of times people are a little bit unwilling to rock the family boat, if you will. But honestly, I think a lot of times the people know when they should have a professional fiduciary, and when they know that the family member really isn't really trustworthy.
Yeah.
Even though, for example, if you have somebody who's really, really a great person and a nice person, but let's suppose that they just finished having a bankruptcy, or they just, you know, they're financially they're unsound. They don't make good financial decisions. They're not well set. So the temptation of significant money that's at their fingertips is high. Well, that's a hard thing to, you know, you're making it difficult for them, and you know, they tend to justify this, that, and the other thing, and so, you know, that's not a good fit under the best circumstances. So
yeah,
it's very difficult. I think choosing a trustee is the most difficult thing you can do. Well, it sounds like we've talked ourselves out of the show. This is Investing Simplified. We'll be back next week. And thank you for listening. If you have a question that we haven't answered, then listen to us next week, and we'll be glad to get that on the radio. Have a wonderful weekend. We're listening to Investing Simplified.